This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Earthwise, Environment and Peace with Justice interviews on Plains FM 96.9.
Welcome to Earthwise. I'm Lois Griffiths. Martin and I are honoured to have the opportunity to talk with today's guest, veteran CIA officer turned political activist Ray McGovern. He was a CIA analyst for 27 years, from 1963 to 1990. And in the 1980s, he chaired the National Intelligence Estimates and prepared the president's daily brief. That was Ronald Reagan.
He received the Intelligence Commendation Medal at his retirement, but he returned it in 2006 to protest the CIA's involvement in torture. In 2003, he co-founded the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Welcome to Earthwise, Ray McGovern.
Thank you.
Well, Ray, in researching for this interview, I've been reading disturbing reports about the CIA and torture, something you protested about, as Martin said in his introduction. Did the CIA always torture, or is this something that really took off after 9/11, the 2001 New York attacks?
Well, I should make certain that people realize that there are really two CIAs. One was the one that Harry Truman set up for himself to be advised in analyzing the events in the world. As he put it, he wanted one agency that he could turn to that was in possession of all the information on a given issue or country and would give him the straight answers. That's what I belong to. The other one was tacked on at the last minute to host those who are specialists in overturning governments and doing other dark acts. They were joined at the hip in 1947 simply because it was a little too embarrassing even then to set up a department for overthrowing governments. They needed some place to put it. The CIA Analysis Division was being created at that time. And so they put them two together. It was a structural fault from the outset, and we're paying the price of that now. Now, the answer to your question, when I joined the CIA in 1963 under President John Kennedy, there were turnstiles that separated our part of the building. There was a relatively new building in Langley, Virginia, from the part that housed the operations division. We couldn't go there. They couldn't come here into the analysis section. And that's the way it was. So in answer to your question, I have to say, I don't know if the CIA always tortured people. My impression from reading the New York Times is that, no, we used to farm that out. We used to help Latin American dictators learn how to do this, and we learned from best practices of agencies such as the Gestapo and others, but we passed those on to people who would do that work for us. After 9/11, and maybe this isn't as familiar to you all in New Zealand as it is here, but there is a ditty: after 9/11, everything changed, quote, end quote. And that means that colleagues that I worked with, even on the analysis side, were somehow ripped from their moral moorings and decided that, wow, we're going to seek retribution and we're going to do all kinds of mean things that Vice President Cheney told us to do. Why? Well, because after 9/11, everything changed, and it was then, as I understand it, that we started torturing people. And now we have one of the torturers in chief as head of the Central Intelligence Agency. Shameful.
Yes, I wanted to get on to that. From what I've read, she was in charge of a we call a black site. Black prison or something in Thailand. Is this done in other places besides Thailand?
Oh, yes. It was a growth industry under Dick Cheney. You see, George Tenet, who was head of the CIA at the time, did everything and anything that the vice president told him to do. The vice president informed the president, George W. Bush, every now and then, but they were what Dick Cheney called the dark side practices. The existence of secret prisons, those were the black sites, all around the world, was revealed by an enterprising journalist for the Washington Post, if memory serves, early 2006. And it was then that most of us became aware, oh my God, not only in Thailand, which was the first black site, but all over the world, Poland, Lithuania, on ships in the Indian Ocean. It was just amazing. There, I forget how many altogether now, but Gina Haspel was directress of the first black site in Thailand. We know where it is. We're not supposed to say exactly where it is, but that's where Abu Zubaydah and al-Nashiri were taken. And, well, Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded, guess how many times? 183 times. Al-Nashiri, well, I think the number for him was much, much lower, but waterboarding has always been torture. Torture has always been illegal. And, you know, I have to keep reminding people that torture is not bad because it's illegal. It's illegal because it's bad. It's something that civilized nations agreed is not something that human beings do to other human beings. That's why there are laws against it. That's why it's illegal. It is, in the way I learned philosophy and theology, moral theology, or some people call it ethics, it inhabits a category of evil called intrinsic evil, always, always wrong. In that category, I remember distinctly were three, and one was slavery, one was rape, and one was torture, always evil. So, you know, the fact that we succumb to that, the fact that people did the bidding of this éminence, I don't call him éminence please, I call him éminence noir.
Yes.
Dick Cheney. Yeah. It's just really shameful. And as I watched her being confirmed, I saw some of my old colleagues, my God, people I worked with, people who were really, really dedicated, hardworking, and smart as could be. There they were, advocating for her, sitting in the front row. And I could only, it was almost too much to tolerate. And the senators, you know, they call that the Senate Intelligence Committee. They call it the Oversight Committee. Well, this particular Senate Committee, unlike the House, really should be called the Overlook Committee, because that's what it does. It's joined at the hip with the intelligence people, and that the evidence of that is abundant. And so they gave her a free pass. What was really, really too much to take was that one of the good senators, Senator Ron Wyden, who has a moral sense, he said, "Now, Ms. Haspel, I'm running out of time, but just tell me, yes or no, were you in charge of the waterboarding of al-Nashiri in Thailand, yes or no?" "Senator, I can't tell you that because it's classified." My God, so, you know, he's out of time, right? So what would his next question have been? "Miss Haspel, could you tell me who classified that?" And she would have had to say, "Well, I did, Senator." Mm-hmm. So there you go, you know. The American people at a public hearing are being deprived of the answer to whether she was a torturer because she classified the information that indicts her, that made her completely unacceptable to be the head of the CIA. Do we have a great country here or what? Senators voted her out and voted her in. Shameful.
Well, Yes, the torture is terrible, but even the language used, though, it's being called enhanced interrogation.
Well, you know, Lois, most people don't realize that when they develop this expression, enhanced interrogation techniques, to give a euphemism for torture, that is a literal translation of verschärfte Vernehmung, verschärfte, sharpened or enhanced, Vernehmung, interrogation techniques, right out of the Gestapo manual. I have the manual. It's the chapter head for enhanced interrogation techniques, verschärfte Vernehmung. Now, you would have thought, well, I should add, of course, that most of the techniques in that Gestapo manual were ones that were subsumed under this sobriquet, enhanced interrogation techniques. In other words, most of them were right there. But you would have thought that anyone with some historic sense would have said, "Well, wait a second. Hello, do we want to label these a direct translation of what the Gestapo used?" Well, they didn't have that historical sense, so they went ahead and labeled it the same. So it's the same kind, you know, this sleep deprivation, you know, banging heads against walls, putting people in small little foot lockers, people they know to have phobias against insects, putting insects in there with them. And, you know, one of the most horrific ones was called rectal feeding. Now, there's no medical indication in God's world for rectal feeding. You know, there are rare cases where doctors might recommend rectal hydration in certain circumstances, but rectal feeding, what was that all about? Well, the ironic thing, or the sad thing really, is this same committee, under different leadership, Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat from California, was the chair at the time, spent four years, from 4 years before 2014, so that would be from 2010 to 2014, examining original CIA cables from the field, CIA documents from headquarters, CIA stuff, undisputed stuff originating in CIA. Now, how did the Senate get access to that? Well, you prepared for some more irony? When the Senate learned that Gina Haspel and her boss, Jose Rodriguez, when the Senate committee learned that Gina Haspel and her boss had destroyed the videotapes of the torture going on in this black site in Thailand, they got angry. They stood up and said, "This shall not be." And they voted. I think it was an almost unanimous vote to require the head of the CIA at the time, Leon Panetta, to allow an investigation based on original CIA traffic from the field and from headquarters. And that happened. In December of 2014, a 7,000-page document was produced. An executive summary of about 500 pages was redacted and released, and that was a crowning achievement of real oversight by the Senate committee. Now, that was Dianne Feinstein. In January of 2015, the Senate changed hands. You know what that's like when the majority party loses. So the Republicans took the chairmanship. Richard Burr from North Carolina, he took the chair, and the first thing he did was to say, "I own all the copies of that Senate investigation, and I recall them. You must send them back to me immediately." Now, in my mind's eye, I see Gina Haspel trotting off to the Senate precincts to be the first one to give that Senate study back. I think he succeeded in getting all the copies of that document back. There is alleged to be one in the Obama library, but Obama does not have the gumption to stand up to these folks. He never did, and he never will. So if they tell him to destroy that, I'm sure he will salute. The point is that Gina Haspel's name is under under many of those blackouts or many of those cutouts with the razor that we weren't allowed to see in the redacted report. But it's clear as a bell that she was there, she supervised it, and all that was obfuscated. And that's what got me up on my feet. All I did was go up there and excuse myself, and I said, now, Senator Wyden is entitled to a straight answer to his question. You were in charge of the site in Thailand, and then I had four policemen descend on me and give me the treatment, dragging me out, shouting all the while, stop resisting. So my old voice was muffled. So that's the way it goes. I'm happy to be able to tell my grandchildren when they ask me, oh, hey, Grandpa, you work for the CIA. What's it like to torture people? I can tell them, well, not only did I not work in that part of the agency, not only did I not torture people, but I did everything I could, starting in 2006 when it became clear that the CIA was not denying what they were doing. I threw back my big intelligence commendation medallion that they gave me after I had retired, and I did everything I could to dissociate myself from these heinous practices that my colleagues on the other side of the turnstiles were doing.
You're listening to Earthwise, broadcasting in Christchurch on Plains FM 96.9, in Hamilton on Free FM, and in Waikanae on Coast Access FM. Today's guest is former CIA analyst Ray McGovern.
Well, Ray, I read in the Atlantic a report about what was done to Abu Zubaydah, and it does raise several questions. One, who was actually torturing? Was it CIA people, or were there any whistleblowers? And is this practice stopped? Can we be sure that it won't be continued?
Well, let's answer your last question first. We have a president who says torture works.
Mm.
That's a lie. Torture works only under one specific circumstance, and that is if you want inaccurate information. Now, is that sort of like a theoretical thing? No. I'll give you an example. There was a fellow named Alibi. He was a Libyan. He was a kind of a functionary in Al-Qaeda. He arranged the tickets for Al-Qaeda people flying around the world. Well, when they caught him, they said, oh, I'll bet he could prove that there was tight cooperation between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Now, that was a fiction. They hated each other. They had lots of reason to hate each other, but Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were far from good friends. Okay, so what did they do? Well, they tortured this guy. And they said, well, you must know something about how close the relationship is. Didn't you send operatives up from Al-Qaeda up to be trained in explosives and chemical weapons up there in Baghdad? Don't you remember that? And he said, no, I did the air ticket. He couldn't get him to, quote, confess, end quote. And so they rendered him, that's the word we use for kidnapping, rendered him to the Egyptian service. Now, the Egyptian service has even more experience in such techniques. And after they tortured him a while, they said, now, look, we can stop this if you could just remember. Can't you remember sending Al-Qaeda people up there to Saddam Hussein for training? Alibi said, oh, yeah, now I remember. Oh, sure. Okay. So they got a report out of that. They sent it to CIA headquarters. And guess what? That report was used to persuade Secretary of State Colin Powell to include in his famous or infamous speech before the UN Security Council on the 5th of February 2003, just before the attack on Iraq, for Colin Powell to say there was a, quote, sinister nexus, end quote, between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. That was charge number two. The first one was equally trivial, equally false, fraudulent. The word of circuit, that weapons of mass destruction were known not to be there.
Yes,
this other thing swung the balance. So that's how you, if you want inaccurate information, that's how you get it.
Sorry to interrupt, but let's just very briefly get to the future. I have a sick feeling from what I've been reading that the U.S. will go to war with Iran on similar excuses. Do you see this as a likelihood? And if so, who is pushing it?
Well, John Bolton, who we used to call one of the crazies, is pushing it. He is the national security advisor to President Trump. Now, the only gleam of hope is that President Trump seems to be overruling John Bolton on Korea, and that is big. Bolton did all he could to put the kibosh, as we say, on the summit that was to take place. Now it looks like there's an even chance it will take place. So Trump has seen the light and disregarded Bolton's advice and his provocations. Will he do the same on Iran? I'm not a betting man. So I don't know. I'd say it's 50-50 that Bolton will be able to agree with the Israelis to mount the kind of provocation that would, quote, justify, end quote, an armed clash with Iran. I hope that doesn't happen, but Bolton is indeed crazy, and I can certify that. He is certifiable, and Trump doesn't seem to know whom to turn to. So saving grace there would be the defense minister, James Mattis. It's really hard to have to say that the saving grace might come from a fellow who brags about being called Mad Dog Mattis. But even Mad Dogs don't start wars that they can't win. And Mattis is smart enough to know that getting involved in a war with Iran, they can bomb the hell out of it, but they're not going to win. They're not going to win in a country of 80 million people who are well prepared to defend themselves. So Mattis, in this case, in the other case, you had other more sensible people chiming in. If Korea goes forward, then there's a chance that reason will prevail even in that crazy White House, and that people like Mattis will say to the president, look, you start a war with Iran, I quit.
Oh, gosh. Well, Ray, there's so much that can be said. It's fascinating talking to you. And thank you for talking with us. What a world we live in. You and any others with inside knowledge who are willing to speak out are so important.
And, Ray, we'll finish with a very short news item that I think will interest you. You may have heard it already. A new Freedom Flotilla is on its way to Gaza, and one of the participants is an ex-CIA analyst, Elizabeth Murray. I'm sure you must know her.
She's a close colleague. She's one of our members of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. She speaks fluent Arabic, German, and Spanish. She's been using her German at the ports of call.
Yes.
One of those things. It's been really, really good.
Oh, fascinating. There'll be two New Zealanders on the flotilla as well.
I'm sorry?
There'll be two New Zealanders taking part.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, well, they're supposed to reach Gaza or Gazan waters in July, and that will be a major, major event. And If Netanyahu is allowed to shoot up those boats, or even just to put the passengers in jail, that will be a proof positive that our president, Trump, has no more guts than Obama did when he prevented us, and I was on one of the boats, the U.S. boat to Gaza 2011.
Were you? Oh, gosh.
Thank you. Obama said he couldn't face into Netanyahu. He said to Netanyahu, please don't shoot up this boat. It's an American flagship, so please don't do that. And Netanyahu just smiled sweetly. So what Obama did was prevent us from leaving the Greek ports, all three boats, and we never got outside of Piraeus.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, I'm afraid our time is up. It's very kind of you to give us so much time.
If I disappear, please look into it.
Yes.
Okay, and don't forget New Zealand.
Okay, take care now.
Goodbye. Well, Martin, what an interview. And our time is up. So from us at Earthwise, goodbye.